And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we're recapping a big win on Monday Night
60?
Football.
Only 60?
Only 60.
Only 60?
Maybe we'll go 61 if you're nice.
I was thinking more like 6 hours.
Well, I'm sure Giants fans could talk 6 hours. You, we know, could go seven. But we'll try to give you the condensed version over the course of this program. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in using hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. A lot to tackle as the Giants held off the Bengals 21-20 on Monday Night Football. So they win four games in a row for the first time since the 2013 season. And let's start with some of the key storylines in this game, Paul. And really, the trenches is what defined this contest. On offense, Brett Jones goes down after he filled in for Justin Pugh, so they had to move Marshall Newhouse into left guard, and they run the ball effectively, specifically on that final drive so that they could get into victory formation. And then on the flip side, Paul, you know, they took advantage of a Bengals offensive line that had a lot of question marks. They gave up 25 sacks coming in. They get three sacks, the Giants, and they made Andy Dalton uncomfortable. Back-to-back sacks on one of Cincy's last possessions.
Lance, it's no coincidence that in the Giants' six wins, they won the Battle of the Trenches. In their three losses, they lost the Battle of the Trenches. I think what I put on my Twitter this morning is, old school, it always adds up. That's just the way it is, okay? You win the trenches, chances are you're going to win the game. You lose the trenches, chances are you're going to lose the game. It's not that hard, folks. Now, yes, turnovers, penalties, missed tackles, other hugely important key stats to keep in mind in terms of the fate of what your team's going to do on a given weekend. But it still starts in the trenches. It always has. It always will. And if you don't believe what we just said about this game, Giants ran for 122 yards. They drained the last 3 minutes off the clock exclusively on the ground, okay? They allowed only one sack, even though Eli certainly got hurried a bunch and got hit a bunch, okay? I said they had the one time of possession. Slight, but they one time of possession.
That counts.
Okay? Those are all the critical factors when you're looking at your offensive line. How'd they do in the trenches? Geno Atkins is an all-world defensive tackle. Dunlop is an all-pro defensive end. We knew that the Bengals' defensive front was the strength of their team, and it was going to be very hard to win that matchup. I'd say the Giants, at their very worst, and I'm saying they won it. But if you want to be a skeptic, you want to be a critic, you want to say they drew, fine. I'll give you that if you want to. I'm saying no. The Giants' offensive line with Marshall Newhouse replacing Brett Jones, who got injured, won the trenches on that side of the ball. May have been a small win, but they won it. On the other side, it was dominant. Bengals, 78 yards of rushing, 3.4 a carry. That's nothing to write home about.
And this was a team that started to click on the ground leading into this
Absolutely,
game.
With Hill and Bernard.
Yeah.
Come on, we all knew that they were a good running team. Giants had three sacks. They absolutely pressured Dalton several times and hit him several times throughout the day. And in the fourth quarter, when it mattered the most, on the three Bengals drives, when they had possessions, they came up with zero. Because the pressure and the heat, the two sacks on the Bengals' last drive, were huge. That's winning the battle in the trenches. That's why the Giants won this game.
And it looked as if, you know, maybe the Bengals would start to shift the momentum of this contest off of what you alluded to earlier, the turnovers. Remember, after Landon Collins gets the interception, which was key, the very next play, Eli Manning throws it deep down the field.
A punt, basically.
It did turn into a punt, but nonetheless, you give the ball immediately back to the Bengals and you say, uh-oh, you know, maybe Cincy's going to capitalize. And then the Giants' defense made the critical stops. They contained A.J. Green for the most part. He made plays, but he didn't become that overwhelming factor in the contest, and neither did the run game.
I want to point to that particular possession, Lance. Third and one from the Bengals' own 21 after Eli basically throws that punt for an interception. You got Boyd catches the one-yard screen, which was just, it was out of a chaos formation. I have no idea what the Bengals were doing because the Giants read it and it wasn't going anywhere. Then they get a Hill, 8 yard gain for Green. And then Hill on third and one gets 0 yardage. Vernon and snacks.
All converged. And I think they were trying to run it up the gut, if I'm correct, and he had nowhere to go on that play.
Actually, I had him behind left guard.
Okay,
but nonetheless.
Slightly off, but it was. I think he then tried to cut back to the middle, but they were all over that.
Gets stopped an inch short, fourth down, Bengals forced to punt. I mean, Olivier Vernon, I can't say enough about him. I can't say, I know he had only one sack, and oh, premier pass rushers are supposed to have more sacks than that. That's right. Excuse me. That's right. He was terrific. That's his best game as a Giant.
No doubt. And I think he's starting to gain momentum over the last few contests. You know, people talk
played
about
great in London,
how
too.
Quiet he was. And, you know, the wrist injury, I'm sure, played a role. But he seems to be heating up. And JPP was involved.
JPP was sensational last night.
Everybody. I mean, everybody pretty much put their stamp on this game, specifically on the defensive end. They made Andy Dalton uncomfortable. And no matter who the quarterback is, if you make him uncomfortable, you force him to run out of the pocket. I mean, how many times, Paul, was Dalton running out of the pocket? He wasn't dropping back and then surveying the field. He had to really change things on the fly. And then when he tried to maneuver through the defensive pressure, you know, more often than not, the Giants got him onto the ground.
The Giants had six quarterback hits with the three sacks and six tackles for losses. Just think about that for
and
a second.
And Vernon had two of them.
Just think about that. That's winning the trenches.
They read the screenplays. Dalton only had the 15-yard scramble. Other than that, didn't really do much of anything with his legs. And Dalton, to a certain degree, is a mobile quarterback, but
yes,
he really wasn't able to extend many plays because of the coverage down the field, specifically Janoris Jenkins, who I thought did a really nice job on A.J.
Very good
throughout
job.
This contest.
Very good job. And, you know, I'll go back to that one stat that we talked about earlier. It is one of your indicators, at least for me, missed tackles. Not a whole lot of missed tackles.
And not a lot of big plays, too, other than that Tyler Eifert.
Well, and again, usually yards after catch involves missed tackles on the defensive side of the ball. Giants had a handful, and that was it.
So overall, you take that into consideration. Big reason why the Giants walk away with a 21-20 victory. They've won four in a row. They're 6-3. Sole possession of second place in the NFC East. And you have the Bears and the Browns upcoming. Two teams with losing records who are struggling immensely. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but the schedule does look promising. But the Giants still need to take care of business, avoid the mental mistakes with the upcoming schedule, because it can be dangerous when you go up against teams that have absolutely nothing to lose at this point. We will certainly look ahead to the Bears matchup as we move forward on this program, but we also want to continue to recap the Bengals game. Your phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's head to the phone lines to begin the festivities. We turn to Kevin in New York. Kevin, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
Doing well, Kevin.
Hi.
Nice things with you.
Good. I just want to recap yesterday's game on what I thought about the offense and defense. I just want to start with the offense first, and finally, you know, we've been waiting for this. The Giants were able to run the football really well last night, especially in the fourth quarter right there to close out the game. You know, that was really nice. And, you know, I think the Giants, they really didn't have many negative runs, and I think that was huge. You know, I thought the Giants were solid on third down. They went 6-for-14 for 42% conversion. And, you know, they had a couple of drops on third down, too, that Roger Lewis one specifically. And I thought they converted some third and longs as well, so that was really nice to see. And like you mentioned, Paul, they finally won the time of possession, and because of their ability to run the football effectively. And
you
I think that kept our defense.
Yeah,
and I think that really helped our defense, especially at the end right there, because, you know, they weren't playing, you know, many snaps. And, you know, the biggest key to me on the offense side of the football for this game, guys, was the Giants went 3-for-3 on the red zone. You know, they scored three touchdowns. They didn't settle, you know, for a field goal. But, you know, one sour note on, you know, the offense was, you know, again, two turnovers. That's, I believe that's 17 games in a row where the Giants have turned the football
it's
over.
It's actually 18, and, which is the longest active streak in the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah, 18, yeah. Sorry, 18, yeah, Lance. So, you know, they really need to stop turning the football over.
Yeah,
and,
that would help.
That would really help. You guys agree?
Absolutely. I think that goes without saying. The only positive spin to that, and that doesn't mean that you can continue this trend, is that if you look, the opposing teams have not been able to capitalize on these turnovers. And I think that speaks volumes to the defense, specifically the red zone defense. If it wasn't for the Giants' red zone defense, your point, Kevin, it could be a lot worse this season. Because if you notice that of the turnovers, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe it's something like the Giants have only given up about four touchdowns off of all those turnovers this season. And that's quite remarkable when you take into consideration the volume of turnovers. And that's all because of, like I said, even with teams getting within the and 20, the red zone defense has come through for the Giants.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just want to talk about the defense real quick, a couple of quick points before I go. You know, first, the Giants defense held the Bengals to 2 of 11 on third down. That's, you know, 18%. I think they did an outstanding job, you know, getting off the field on third down. And, you know, they didn't have many big plays, you know, other than that Eifert play. I think they, you know, pretty much held the Cincinnati offense in check throughout the night.
Well, there was the one special teams return, too.
The Alex Erickson.
Basically, those are your two scores right there.
Yeah.
Right.
And they capitalized on both of those big runs. They scored touchdowns.
Yeah, and, you know, it was really nice to see, you know, finally, you know, we got the fourth quarter pass rush, which, you know, we've been lacking. You know, I thought, you know, Vernon and JBP, like you said, you know, they had a monster game. I think Snacks, you know, I think he had the sack with Casillas, that first one from back-to-back. I thought,
yep,
that, you know, the interior pass rush was good. And, you know, just one final thing before I go. The Giants have, you know, momentum. You know, they have, you know, they got two more games, you know, against the Bears and Browns, you know. And like you said, Lance, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but, you know, they have a chance to go to 8-3, you know, and, you know, at Thanksgiving. And, you know, I can't wait to see them play again next week. Thank you, guys.
All right, Kevin, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. It is a favorable schedule coming up. You have a Bears team that's 2-7, 0-5 on the road. They have yet to win on the road, and then the Browns are obviously winless. But, you know, as we've seen in the National Football League, sometimes you can't get overwhelmed by the record because unpredictable things happen in this league. And that's why the Giants, the mindset has to be of you're going up against perhaps some of the top teams in the NFL the next 2 weeks. And if they have that mindset, you don't treat the game any differently, and they can continue to try to build off this momentum. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. One thing that Kevin brought up, Paul, which I thought was a key point about that, why the Giants' running game was effective yesterday, clearly because of some of the big runs that Rashad Jennings had, but overall, if you look at all the runs, and they ran the ball 27 times, they had, according to my tally, they had one run for no gain. They had none for negative yardage. And if you look over the course of the season, I mean, that may be the first time this year in which,
yeah,
they've had that type of clean running game. I'm looking through my tally here. In week one at the Cowboys, they had four for no gain or negative yards. Week two against the Saints, they had 10 runs of that kind. Redskins, they had two. The Vikings, two. The Packers, three. The Ravens, four. The Rams, they had six runs of that kind. And against the Eagles, they had seven. So they had a season-low one run for no gain or negative yardage in this last contest.
That's known as the stuff in football coaching nomenclature. When you stop an opponent for zero or negative yards on a run, it's called the stuff. It's a defensive stat that's kept. And I can't say enough about the way they ran the ball last night, even though it was only 122 yards, which for them seems like a miracle. You know, you'd like to run, in my mind, you'd like to run for about 130, 135 yards a game. That, to me, is the number you want to shoot for. Like I tell people, you want to shoot for 42 to 45 sacks a game. You want,
over the season. That'd be great if it's a game.
Over the season. I mean, there are certain numbers that kind of say, you know what, if you're in that ballpark, you know, you're probably going to be pretty good. So, I mean, 122 is a little bit shy of where you'd like to be, but hey, here's the bottom line. They ran the last 3 minutes off the clock. Rashad Jennings ran five straight times for 38 yards and two first downs to milk the clock as the Bengals ran out of timeouts and had to watch the seconds tick away. That, to me, I don't care if they ran for 1 yard the rest of the game. Those 3 minutes, that's what has to happen when you need it to.
Well, and I include that in running the four-minute offense. And that had been a struggle for the Giants at times in terms of doing that consistently, getting the first downs, and that's what they executed yesterday, the four-minute offense. Ben McAdoo talks about it all the time. So does Eli Manning. The four-minute offense is probably the most critical aspect of everything that you take into consideration, because if you have an opportunity where you have the lead late in the game, you want to be able to milk the clock. The best way to do that is with the ground attack.
And they cannot continue to put the defense on the field for the game's final possession and expect them to win every time.
Correct. The results can't be 100%.
They're not going to happen.
Yeah, it's too risky of a situation. Sometimes the opposition's going to have a play, and they're going to beat you down the field.
Or there's going to be a penalty, and you're going to lose. That's just the way it is. And we saw all those kinds of things happen already 2015.
Yes. That's why the big difference between 15 and 16 right now is the fact that they are closing out games, no matter how it be, whether it be offense or defense. Let's head back to the phone lines. Jay is in Washington. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Doing well, Jay. How's things with you?
Oh, man, things are great now that we won last night.
Understandable.
You know, it's awesome, you know, when you wake up in the morning and you eat breakfast after a win, it does have that special flavor to it, you know, that special taste.
What kind of cereal are you eating? That's what I want to know.
Say what?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Real quick, I just want to give a good shout-out to Robert Thomas and
sack.
Oliver Vernon.
First career sack.
To hit in those sacks at those, I mean those key spots. And that that pick that Colin caught, I mean, talk about a shift changer, a momentum changer. I mean, just sitting on the couch and just watching that, jumping up, and I can't even express the excitement I had when. I mean, I'm just really excited that we won last night. This is a huge win. I mean, with Washington and Philly winning yesterday, I mean, this keeps us in second place. And I mean, I know we're putting the cart before the horse, but if we can, I mean, if we can win out and Dallas lose another game. You know, granted, I understand that, you know, we don't want to
Jay, winning
that.
Out.
Don't,
I mean,
don't use that phrase.
That's an awful
do not
lot to
use
ask.
That phrase.
Winning out under the circumstances.
Winning out. I mean, come on.
I mean, that's
don't
a lot
that.
Of football.
Don't
left.
Do that.
Yeah.
They got to play the Bears on Sunday, and you feel good about the game against the Bears because of what the Bears have put on tape and because of who they'll be missing. I understand that. But don't go win out. Just don't say that.
Well, and here's the other way to look at it, Jay. While the division is certainly still up for grabs, despite the fact that Dallas has looked really good, the Giants control their own destiny. If
that
they
is true.
Continue to go about their business,
that is true.
At worst, they're going to get a wild card. And once you get in the dance, anything can happen. So the Giants just need to look at it look at it from this perspective. If we continue to play consistent football and close out games and win more than we lose, we'll probably put ourselves in a position where we could get a playoff spot. And that's all that matters because they know they've won the Super Bowl before as a wild card team, and multiple teams have done it. The Packers, the Steelers. So the key is to get into the tournament, get in the big dance, as I like to call it. But they can't necessarily worry about, well, if we do this and Dallas does that, they control their own destiny. And that was something they did not do last season.
I'll tell you what. Pittsburgh should have beaten Dallas last week and just absolutely did everything they could not to win that game. But now Dallas is going to play the Ravens this week. That's not a walk in the park. It's not out of the question that the Giants could pick up a game on Dallas this Sunday when the Ravens go to Dallas and Chicago comes here. Again, don't want to put the cart in front of the horse, but if you're looking for where you're going to make up a game, this is a possibility.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And I'm really glad that the running game woke up last night. Jennings came on his own. I mean, I was really concerned that we were just going to be a one-dimensional team. But the fact that, especially towards the end, I mean, we were able to eat up the clock with the running game. And you were right. I mean, those last two, what was it, two first downs I think he got in the last minute?
Yeah, two first downs. Yeah, he ran for nine and then a big 20-plus yarder.
That was huge. I mean, that was huge. And the defensive front showed up. And you're right. The Bengals line was lacking or is not
No. Their defensive line's good. Don't say they're lacking. Their defensive line's good.
Well, he was talking about
good.
Their offense.
No,
offense. Okay. You're right, Jay. You're right. Coming in, they had struggled. They gave up 25 sacks, tied for third most in the NFL, and the Giants took advantage.
But see, and that's the point, though, okay? In this league, in this parity-driven league, you must take advantage of the matchups that you're supposed to win.
Yeah.
You must. If you do not, shame on you.
Right.
Really.
Now, one of my main concerns I do want to say is, what's the status with Cruz? This is just my opinion. I don't feel that Adams and Eli are clicking. I could be overshooting this a little bit, but is Cruz? I mean, what's the status on his injuries? You guys have any update on that?
Well, Ben McAdoo's going to have a conference call later today, so I'm sure he'll try to give an update. But, I mean, we're probably not going to know until tomorrow when the first practice report comes out if he's made any progress and so forth. I mean, the word is that it may not be as serious as perhaps some of the media reports indicated, but I think it's pure speculation at this point. And, I mean, you mentioned – I don't know if you meant Adams, because Jarrell Adams actually has built some nice chemistry with Eli Manning, Jay. I think maybe – did you mean Tavares King or Roger Lewis?
I think he meant Lewis.
Yeah, because Adams has done a nice job as a tight end.
The drop balls were key.
He were key. But here's the thing. They were key. They were key all around. It wasn't just Lewis.
Five drops.
Shepard had a drop. Will Ty had a drop.
Jennings had two.
Right.
Everybody was guilty of contributing to that. Yeah. All right, Jay. Appreciate the phone call.
Guys.
You got it. Thanks so much for chiming in. 201-939-4513.
We're halfway through the show. I need to do this. One of my game balls, if I were to be able to give one out, I don't want to let this go by the boards, because he did not have a sack yesterday, but he was sensational. JPP had a monster game, and we knew he would, against that right tackle on the Bengals. And help me out with that pronunciation. You're real good with it now. Come on.
Let me get my chart here, because I have everything. You're putting me on the spot here.
It's a difficult name.
75 of my papers. The right
Obwehi.
Tackle. Obwehi. Yes.
Obwehi.
Correct.
Okay.
Cedric Obwehi.
He had given up 5.5 sacks coming into the game. He, in my mind, was the weakest guy on that offensive line, and I had said JPP needs to have a big game against him, and boy, did he ever. Now, here's what I want to tell you, folks. Forget about the fact that JPP had no sacks, because it's easy and it's lazy to just say he had no sacks, he had only 5 tackles, not a big deal. I'm here to tell you that when the coaches look at the films of JPP, they will notice 5 impact plays that he made on defense in the fourth quarter alone. And that's when it's crunch time. Giants lead this game 21-20. Bengals have the ball, 1st and 10 from their own 17 as they take over. And on 2nd down, JPP bats down a pass. That's an impact play. 3 plays later, 2nd down, JPP, with a quarterback pressure, forces Dalton to roll out of the pocket and throw it away to avoid a sack. That is an impact play. 1, 2, 3 plays later, on 1st down, Hill tries left tackle, gets 1 yard, JPP stuffs him. Well, it's not a stuff technically, it's a 1 yard gain.
It
doesn't
stop,
count as
though,
a stuff, but a key stop.
Yeah.
3 plays he makes on the ensuing drive after the Giants had taken a 1-point lead to help stall that drive. Because on the next play, 2nd down and 9, Dalton feels he's got to do something, and he throws the pick. So JPP made 3 plays on that drive that were incredibly important. After the Giants give the ball back on a pick, Bengals go 3 and out, and again, we talk about the play by Snacks and the play by Vernon on 3rd and 1 to hold them an inch short. Awesome. But back to JPP. Bengals get the ball back. Fair catch with 6:17 to go. 1st down at their own 9. By the way, thumbs up to Brad Wing.
Yep.
Been terrific all season. Field position was huge in this game. He did a great job punting the football. Okay, what do we have here? We have, after a 3rd down conversion, 1st down from the Bengals 31, we have another pressure by JPP to force an incompletion. 4th impact play he made in the fourth quarter. Where's the last one? Oh, was that it? That's all I got?
Well, because after that, I'm pretty sure the Giants,
that's all I got,
took care of business.
Oh, wait a minute. So it's only 4. It's not 5. It's only 4. 1, 2, 3. Oh, I'm sorry. Right before that, 2nd down and 3 from the 16, Bernard for a 1-yard loss, stopped by Hankins, Sensabaugh, and JPP. And then 2 plays later, the pressure that forced the throwaway incompletion. 5 important plays that JPP was in on the Bengals' last 3 drives after the Giants had taken a 1-point lead. If you want to believe the lazy people who are going to tell you that JPP didn't have any sacks and it wasn't a great game, go ahead. I'm here to tell you differently, because I know the coaches will feel differently when they look at the films. JPP was a beast last night.
Well, and that goes back to what defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo has said when he's spoken to the media the
last
few
weeks. Be disruptive.
Correct. He's saying that everybody's looking at the sack numbers, and it's an important stat, but it doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. Where he was saying is the numbers that they're seeing and also the eye test is showing that each and every game they feel they're making those disruptive plays that you just alluded to, Paul, and JPP fits under that umbrella. He may not be getting the sacks, but he's disrupting the quarterback, and that obviously is having a big impact on the game. Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Anthony in Dallas. Anthony, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Anthony. How's things with you?
Hey, what's going on, Paul? Man, you're in my mind, Paul. You're just in my brain today because I was just about to talk about JPP. There was a caller yesterday that called but and was trying to criticize JPP, saying that he hit his ceiling and he's no good anymore, something about his hand. And that guy is crazy because I don't want anybody else on that other side opposite OV than JPP. We would be absolutely lucky to keep both of them. And if we don't pay him, somebody's going to.
You know what, my friend? Marvin Lewis and Andy Dalton can tell you a lot about JPP this morning. That's all you need to know.
Yes, they will, because they had their hands full with him.
Now, again,
man,
though,
a great win.
Please, again, understand, he had a dominant matchup. Yeah. He should have dominated this guy, and he did. So he did what he was supposed to do, being that he is a far superior player. But as we all know, just because you've got the edge in the matchup, it doesn't mean you're going to go out there and kick the guy's butt.
Of course, and we've seen that time and time again where teams have had banged up secondaries and the Giants haven't capitalized.
But he did.
Yeah, he did when it counted the most. I mean, at the end, didn't he get hurt? He was holding his
He was down briefly, but then he got up under his own power and walked off the field.
Yeah, well, I hope he's okay, man, because we're going to need him for this run. And hopefully we could keep stringing along some wins, and we'll be able to do something with that is when we see them in December.
Absolutely. Listen, they're going to need him. They're going to need all hands on deck, especially with the amount of snaps that JPP and Vernon have had. There's no doubt about that, Anthony. And appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in here on Big Blue Kickoff Live Tuesday's edition. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow, recapping the Giants' 21-20 victory over the Bengals on Monday Night Football. They win their fourth straight. They improve to 6-3, sole possession of second place in the NFC East behind the 8-1 Cowboys. And up next is a quick turnaround as they'll wrap up a three-game homestand at MetLife Stadium on Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern against the Bears. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, great to talk to you guys. You look pretty good because I guess we all have a little more energy, you know, after a late night and a victory there. So I don't think anybody slept too much. But observations on offense and defense. Hey, I'll start on defense. Jimmy Johnson's up there smiling at Spags. You know, I see more and more of him with this defense that we have now that, you know, he can man up, especially when we get in the crunch, Paul. You know, this is what Jimmy Johnson used to do. He'd sick the dogs on him. And it proved it and shows it when we get down there, especially in the red zone and everything, even Andy Dalton that time. Spagged at him full. He thought he's bringing a house, and then he, you know, quick pass out there, you know. It was great, you know. It was a great team defense all around. And when the pressure's on, that was the difference in the game. We were out to win it. I couldn't believe the Bengals there. If I was them, you know, in that 3 minutes, I would have had everybody up there coming to stop the run and selling out too. But they didn't do it. Same thing on offense then. You have to give McAdoo credit. You know, he went for that play. He was going to win. You know what I mean?
Haven't even talked about it. I'm so glad you brought that up because we haven't even talked about the fourth down play. For those of you who may have fallen asleep, and Joe, I want to interrupt you here for a second because I talked to Sterling Shepard on the field right after the game was over. And basically what happened on that fourth down play, the Giants had already made the decision. McAdoo figured they were going to need a touchdown there. He didn't want to kick the field goal and settle because he respected the Bengals' skill positions on offense, thinking they were going to have to score the touchdown. You couldn't go uphill against that offense all game long. So he had made up his mind on second down they were going to go four down territory for the end zone. Now, what Shepard told me was that Eli and him had discussed a bunch of possibilities that if they saw certain alignments and schemes, that especially if he was going to get isolated against the linebacker, that Eli was going to call off whatever he had, look off, and go to Sterling Shepard. And that's what happened on that play. perfect wound up getting matched up man-to-man coverage on Sterling Shepard on fourth and goal from the three. And so Eli discarded his primary receiver, knew enough to look for Shepard. Shepard knew enough that Eli was going to look for him, and that's how they completed the touchdown pass that wound up winning the game. That is so significant, and that is why Eli Manning is who he is and why all of his critics need to go somewhere else and complain about some other quarterback, because Eli Manning forms that chemistry and that relationship with his guys. Even though Sterling Shepard's only half a year into his NFL career, he and Eli were on the same page. That is so huge, Joe.
Well, he's very good at making changes at the line of scrimmage.
And McAdoo on that in that series, he even told Eli before they got the fourth down, I think he told them,
yes.
I heard him say, we're going for it no matter what. So, you know, Eli threw the shorter pass on third down, and then Eli in his comments later after the game said, you know, it's a lot easier to make it from fourth and two than fourth and seven, you know?
Absolutely. So, well, he thought Tavares King had a chance to get in, though. Don't think he on purpose didn't throw it into the end zone. He thought King might have had a chance to do it, but they closed quickly.
How about the play by Beckham? Unreal. He was like Pac-Man the way he stopped and curled
the
and went back
move,
there
yeah.
and caught the ball. You know, unreal. Now, the one play I want to be a little whatever against Eli, I don't know if Eli wanted to go for broke. I couldn't understand that. Is Travis King that fast? You know, I love him. I seen him in the early preseason. I don't know why he's playing more. But he did throw it into triple coverage, you know, down the
with
field
Tavares
there.
King. Yeah. Well, and, I mean, I think it's not a stretch to say that was a poor decision on Eli Manning's part. I mean, it turned out to not necessarily come back to bite the Giants. And, you know, as Paul mentioned, it really was essentially a punt because he threw it so deep and then the Bengals weren't able to capitalize. But I don't think it's a stretch to say if he probably could have that one back, Tavares King in triple coverage airing it out may have not been the best decision under those
circumstances.
Not at all. Does he have that great of speed that they had double and even triple teaming him? That's going to open it up for everybody. That's why I want to see. I can't understand why Travis King ain't in there. Earlier he had a great move on that slant net where they held him in that. He's showing me, excuse me, a little bit more than Lewis, you know.
I feel bad for Lewis because he's had these drops, and I know from watching him every day during the season into training camp and everything else, I like Lewis a lot, and I feel really bad. I'm telling you guys, if you stick with him, you'll like what you see. It's unfortunate that he hasn't made more plays
to this point. I think they're two good young receivers,
they are.
Paul.
They are.
You know what I mean? And I have to give credit, too, to our offensive line, the Flowers, and who's the other young tackle we have
Bobby
out there now. He's looking great,
shut
too.
Shut down
you
Dunlop,
know, he
didn't
held
he?
Up good yesterday, so... You know, that's where we give the offensive line the credit, the edge over there. You were talking about them, Paul, you know, about holding up on the pass. But with that being able to run that last series out or so, you got to give the edge to our offensive line.
Absolutely.
There,
yeah, I think that group is the unsung heroes of yesterday's game. I mean, Newhouse comes in and after the game, and Joe, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. In the post game, in the locker room, it was interesting. Newhouse talked about how barely had any reps next to Richburg. So he's basically learning on the fly, the signals and everything. Very limited activity at guard during the course of practice, nothing during training camp. So it was really uncharted territory.
He played
territory.
Guard in his career prior, though, with Green Bay and Cincinnati. He had
but
played
still,
guard.
But still limited action specifically next
no
to Richburg,
question.
Though. You can play guard and you're next to a different center.
Absolutely.
It changes the dynamics. So.
Absolutely.
And remember, the other thing that they were doing
he was going against Geno Atkins.
Correct. He was going against Geno, but also they were on that last drive. They were mixing him in and out. He then also lined up as a tight end in
and
the jumbo package. He
Geddes came in.
Adam Geddes came in. So, I mean, it was like game of musical chairs.
Oh, it really was.
And the fact that, you know, he adjusted to that, adapted on the fly, and they were successful running the football says a lot about the job that the offensive line did. Carlos Dunlap, you brought up to me, the one play that he could have come close to getting was an interception off a deflected pass. Other than that, he was not nearly as much of a disruptive force as he had been in the previous games. Remember, he led this team in sacks, and he also had 7 passes defense, which to me was far more impressive than the 5 sacks he's had on the season.
Well, not only did he lead the NFL in terms of defensive linemen with passes defensed, and now, by the way, he's tied with JPP, who has 7 himself. Okay, Dunlop, with his 7 passes defensed, led the Bengals. the next best guy had only four.
He beat the whole secondary. It's remarkable.
Which, again, why did I tell you guys in the pregame show about the matchup? You know, the back seven, not that impressive with Cincinnati.
Well, but they are opportunistic, and they did wind up
opportunistic,
with
and they rely on a very, very strong front four.
They do. Which was disruptive to a certain degree. But the Giants battled. They fought through. And they made the blocks when they needed to. And one that jumps out to me, I believe it was on the Jennings 9-yard run, Paul. The one before he had the big 20-yard run. Atkins seemed as if he had position. Because if you remember, Jennings slightly hesitated.
Yes.
Like, I thought they were going to lose yardage on that 9-yard run. Jennings, if you go back and you watch that play, he shifts to his left.
Right.
He's right in front of the offensive line. Then all of a sudden, patiently, he waits. The hole opens up to his right, and then he cuts through it, and then he winds up picking up the 9 yards. But if you go back, Atkins had position that was knocked to the ground with Vontaze Burfict. After the play, the two of them are looking at each other. They're like, what the hell just happened?
Who put him down?
I don't remember who put him down.
I will go back and look at it. I will.
But Burfict and Atkins, you could tell they're frustrated.
I know Richburg had a big block on the 25-yarder.
It may have been Richburg, but I don't want to speak out of line. I have to go back and watch the play. But I distinctly remember live seeing Atkins and Burfict extremely frustrated and looking at each other. We had an opportunity to make a play, and then it just slipped right out of our hands.
You know, and in talking to Rashad Jennings after the game, he talked about when I asked him specifically on the 3-minute drive what went right there, and he addressed the patience because he said, first of all, the coaching staff had confidence in us to go back to the run there, and then second of all, he thought that he was feeling the blocks better, seeing the blocks. The guys were getting man up on everybody, and he was patiently waiting for them to do what they had to do, having confidence in them and having a rhythm with them, and it all worked out.
And like I said, that 9-yard run, if you go back and watch it,
I will.
And six, that to me was the best display of what you're talking about, Paul, where Jennings had the patience to wait for the holes to open up as opposed to being a little too antsy. Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Christian in Colorado. Christian, what's happening?
How's it going, guys?
Doing well, Christian. How's things with you?
Pretty well, especially after the win. But I just want to say this season our defense is like night and day from last season. I think our secondary has improved the most. Janoris Jenkins held A.J. Green last night, 4 catches, 23 yards. That's ridiculous. I think Janoris Jenkins is probably one of the best corners in the game right now.
He's really good.
Certainly playing like that.
In my opinion, big shouts out to Eli Apple, too. He had a great game last night. I think he only had...
He bounced back, I will tell you that, because he really had a rough time against Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked about that. What is Eli Apple going to do? And he bounced back. He gave up a pass or two, as I recall, from looking at my notes.
Yeah.
Gave up a couple of completions, but I thought he played much better again.
Yeah. And Landon Collins, wow. That guy's amazing.
Yeah.
What a draft pick that was. I feel like that's one of the biggest steals. Wow. But
well, the job he's doing in coverage, I think, is extremely impressive.
Yeah.
Which was an issue at times last season. I mean, we all know he's effective at the line of scrimmage, but what he's doing on the back end, how he's seeing the field, and the fact that he has 4 interceptions now in 3 games, I mean, that to me is the perfect example of how far he's come along.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a Pro Bowl year for him, shaping up to be. I just read Olivier Vernon and JPP most snaps.
Yeah.
In the league?
Correct.
Most snaps in the league.
It's been like that, Christian. It's been like that for weeks. They have had the more snaps than any other defensive line.
They've played like 98% of the snaps for the season.
That's nothing new.
I mean,
I don't know. Do you guys think we should kind of dial it down as the season progresses, as we get more wins, hopefully?
Well,
or what we do, like if we do want to make it a playoff stretch, do we kind of save those guys for that, or are we going to be all right when that –
If they can handle it, why would you pull them back?
Yeah, no. I'm not trying to get those guys off the field at all.
please don't.
And I think that's Spags' philosophy. He's saying to himself, if I don't get the same level of production when I take them off the field, I'm not going to try to take him off the field. And I think what showed last night, Christian, is the fact that if Vernon and as Paul went over all of the JPP impactful plays, if most of those plays are happening late third quarter, early fourth quarter, that's an example to me that the high level of snaps is not wearing these guys down. Yeah, they're playing their best football at the end of the game. I don't really think it's anything overly concerning.
Although, to be fair, in most games, because the Giants have been losing the time of possession battle, those guys have been playing like 70-something snaps a game. Yesterday, defense was on the field for 58 snaps, which is a low number for them. Collins, Jenkins, and Apple played all 58. JPP played 57, and Vernon played 56. Excuse me, they had to take a breath.
Yeah, they're allowed. Once in a while, they're allowed to take a breath.
Yeah. And Romeo Okwara, he didn't look that bad either. Looks like we might be giving him a couple of snaps.
He did, let's see here. What were his total numbers on his snaps? Romeo played, because I know he had a big tackle on special teams.
Yep.
Let's see. Romeo, where are you? He had 9 snaps on defense and played 20 snaps on specials. I like the kid. And I think there's some ups there, too. But, again, at the moment, you know, he's a bit player. He's a role player. Doesn't mean you can't like him, because I like him, too. And he definitely did some things in the game yesterday. But on specials, he had one squashing tackle where he just took the guy right out.
Unlike his Halloween costume when he was a penguin.
Yes.
Not necessarily playing like that, we should mention.
Yes.
All right, Christian, appreciate the phone call.
You got it. Crusader.
Thanks so much for chiming in. The reason I brought that up is I actually thought he had the best costume of all the guys. Though spicy mustard was not bad. Who was that? Roger Lewis.
Roger Lewis
was
extra
spicy mustard, I think it was, right? That was it.
Dante Dion was a strip of bacon.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, but I think people get too crazy over the food. I thought the penguin outfit was rather interesting, that Okwara wore. But anyway, getting back to the game. Bengals fall to the Giants 21-20 on Monday Night Football. You know, we're going to try to mix things in here or there. Let's head back to the Lions. JD is in North Carolina. JD, what's happening?
Hey, Paul Lance. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
Thanks for making it, JD. So what do you have for us?
I just wanted to get a couple of points from the game and get your guys' opinion. First of all, I think this is the game that we've been waiting for the Giants offense to have for a while. They pretty much saw a too high safety look most of the game from Cincinnati, and they finally made them pay for it in the run game. It wasn't a completely dominant showing from Jennings in the run game, but they definitely got some stuff done, and like you guys were saying, they were able to close it out at the end of the game. So that's a big sign of confidence going forward. And I think another big takeaway from this game was the confidence that the coaches showed on both sides of the ball with the offense, you know, having the confidence to have them out there going for it on fourth down and then getting a little more creative in the play calling. I think that was fantastic. That first drive of the game, that one play where they did a play action trap, and that was phenomenal, sucking in the linebackers, making them think it was going to be a run play when they pulled the guard. And then that fake reverse to Beckham, where they wound up throwing it to Jennings after the delay. I think that was another great play. Shows that they definitely got more confidence in the offense and in the defense, too. The amount that Spagnuolo was willing to blitz and the pressure that they were putting out there, especially having to defend a guy like A.J. Green, I think that showed a lot of confidence in the secondary.
That's true.
Being able to blitz and leave him out there. And Janoris Jenkins, my goodness. I think this guy is – I know he's a lot better than I thought. I don't know if everybody had the expectations for him that he's been displaying this year, but that was about as close to shutting down A.J. Green as I think you could get. So big, big shout-out to Janoris Jenkins. And then as far as the pass rush, again, phenomenal last night. And I think maybe – I don't know if you guys think this is accurate, but – it seemed like when they were bringing the blitz from the A-gap, that seemed to be like the final piece of the puzzle that they've been missing all season. They've been getting so close with pressure all season and just being one half a step away from getting the quarterback so many times. But last night, when they were bringing that pressure up the middle, they seemed to get home a lot. And that was really, really exciting to see. Kennard back in there, he looked like he was getting pressure on the plays that he was in and rushing the passer. So a lot of positives from last night. And then shout out to the O-line for dealing with Geno Atkins. I mean, it looked like, well, was Brett Jones out in the first series of the game?
Yeah.
Or, I mean,
that's when he suffered the strained calf.
Yeah, and then bringing in Newhouse and rotating in Geddes. I mean, you know, there were some plays where Geno Atkins definitely ate somebody's lunch, but that happened in the game with him. But for the most part, they were able to keep him at bay. So, I mean, I think that was a great game. And, again, one more shout-out to Beckham. I don't think I've ever seen a receiver that has been able to create space and get open on his own more than Beckham does. The way the moves he puts on DBs and the way he sets guys up and then just leaves them like with their ankles broke. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah,
this, right?
You know, if I could steal an analogy with the Pac-Man game, he really looked like one of the Goonies who usually chases after Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Right? He looked like one of the Goonies as he lost Pac-Man into the end zone to catch the touchdown.
Just
and he just looked
had
so disheartened.
And you know what it is?
I mean, he knew he was beat.
I had a scout and a long-term personnel guy tell me when Beckham came out of school, the reason why physiologically, like you know how they talk about Michael Phelps, his physiological components make him a great swimmer because technically he's got all the right measurements to make him a great swimmer.
He's just physically built for
right.
it. Right.
Here's the thing about Beckham. What I was told is that his hip rotation is like absolutely off the charts. He's got unbelievably smooth and quick and fluid hip rotation, which is why he is a great route runner and so elusive and just drives guys batty as they try to stay with him through his moves because he's got this sensational hip rotation. You can't teach that, okay? You can't. It's like he's got ball bearings in there, and he's just slipping and sliding.
He's very shifty.
And you can't deal with that as a defensive back.
Yeah, you would think it's probably something he picked up from playing soccer all those years. That's a very common movement in soccer.
Could be. I don't know.
We've been doing that a lot.
I think he was kind of born with it,
now.
If you ask me.
The athletic genes in the family, I'm sure, helped
yeah.
as well. And, JD,
yeah,
appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming
thanks,
in here.
Guys.
You got it on Big Blue Kickoff Live. I want to try to throw in a few tweets here, and then we're going to get back to the phone lines because there are a number of people who want to chime in on the conversation but may not be in the vicinity of a phone. So let's run through a few quick tweets here, observations about the game and so forth. As we move through here, let's take a look at what we have here. Ben Gruen at Gruen Ben Adams, referring to Jarrell Adams, is so much more athletic than Larry Donnell. There's no reason to let Larry back on offense. Well, I mean, Donnell's role has clearly diminished. Adams has increased. I thought what was interesting yesterday, 3 targets, 3 receptions. He's been extremely efficient. He's been efficient, actually, on the season. Jarrell Adams has been targeted 10 times. He's caught 9 of those 10 targets. So, I mean, that's impressive for a rookie, and he got his first career touchdown yesterday, which means perhaps that's another option to open things up in the red zone where the Giants have had mixed results in that department. So that is something to keep close tabs on moving forward. E, the chosen one, at E underscore the chosen one. Let's give a huge thank you to Cody Sensabaugh for having a special teams touchdown that for saving a special teams touchdown, excuse me, that changes the game for us big time. Well, I mean, keep in mind the Jeremy Hill wound up getting a touchdown a few plays later. So I don't really know how much of a game-changing play that was. Key, though, for Sensabaugh to hustle and prevent Erickson from getting into the end zone. But if you still look at the end result, Paul, they wound up capitalizing and scoring a touchdown anyway.
Yeah, but that's twice now in the last 2 weeks.
Darren Sproles.
What Robinson did to Sproles and what Sensabaugh did there, where how can you not love seeing that hustle if you're a coach on special teams? I mean, that if that happens once a season, it's a lot. And the Giants just had that happen 2 weeks in a row. Of course, the bad news is that the guy had such a huge return to begin with.
And like you said, it's bad when it's a trend. You don't want to see that continue because they have had trouble in terms of their coverage units, both on punts and kickoffs.
I wonder if that would have happened if Dwayne Harris was okay. You know, Dwayne Harris is a gunner in addition to being their number one kick returner, and now he's got this toe injury. We're waiting to hear from Coach McAdoo today what his status is. I do not want to underestimate the value of Dwayne Harris. I've been singing his praises since the day they signed him. He is a very, very important part of this team. Forget about what he did as a receiver last year. On special teams, he is a multi-tool player. He gives you
kickoff return. He gives you punt return. He gives you kickoff coverage. He gives you punt coverage. The bonus is what he does as a receiver. And this year they haven't needed him as a receiver because the position is so deep. He is a four-way special teams player. If he's out for an extended period of time, that is a big deal.
Specifically the coverage. I mean, they do have Bobby Rainey in the return game, but Rainey's
not,
not a coverage guy.
But he's also not Dwayne Harris.
No,
even
in the return game, he's not Dwayne Harris. Well, but to me, though, I think Harris stands out from the rest of the guys perhaps on the roster.
Well, he could do it all.
Because he could do all four
teams. No question.
That, to me, is extremely versatile and extremely key. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, recapping the Giants' 21-20 victory over the Bengals. Fourth straight victory. They're now 6-3. Destiny is in North Carolina. Destiny, what's happening?
What's up?
How we doing, Destiny?
Good, how are you?
Doing well. So what's on your mind?
Well, I don't really have a lot, but I just wanted to say that they played pretty good last night, except for whenever they weren't blocking their people like they were supposed to.
Tough and defensive front, obviously, with Geno Atkins. Sometimes you're going to miss.
Yeah. And shout out to Beckham. Making his touchdowns and his cool new dance.
The little Thriller flavor.
Yeah.
Well,
he
copied
like
the dance. That was not original. It was copied.
Yeah.
And as I put on Twitter this morning, I'm an old-fashioned guy. I'm old school. I think the spike is all you should ever allow after a touchdown. I'm not into all the showmanship stuff at all, but I also admitted on Twitter today his Twitter rendition or his Thriller rendition was cool.
So you jumped out of the box a little bit.
A little bit. Just because of the time of the year, even though we kind of passed Halloween.
Yes.
And because here's the thing. He did it by himself, back in the end zone, away from the opponents, away from his teammates, not to draw any penalties, okay? Now, if he had done that with three or four of his teammates and they threw a flag,
and
it's a problem.
It was planned and orchestrated, of course.
That wasn't the case here. This was done, again, back in the end zone. Everyone was around, and he did Twitter. And he did Thriller.
He did Thriller, yes.
I've given him that one. Now, I don't need to see it anymore, okay?
Yeah.
But I'll give him that one.
Well, you figure if he's going to do something new, he'll do something a little bit more creative. He's not going to repeat what he did previously.
He probably will. Yeah.
So that's expected.
Anyway.
What else you got, Destiny?
I don't know.
All right. Well, listen, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. You got it. 201-939-4513. Mike is on Long Island. Mike, what's happening?
Oh, hi, guys. Okay, I have the million-dollar question.
Million-dollar
question.
Last
year, the Giants averaged over 26 points per game. This year, it's about 20 points per game. They have approximately the same offensive line. I feel the receiving core is better. So what is it? Is it the coaching? Is it the play calling? Is it Andre Williams? Is it Larry Donnell? Is it the kickoff returner? What you just mentioned, he had a more receiving role last year. So
it's turnovers first.
To me, but last year they had such an explosive offense.
Okay, well, the first thing is when you turn the ball over as much as this offense has this season and as consistently as it has, you're obviously going to have less points. Fewer snaps, worse field position, less time of possession. Automatically, you're going to have less points. That's a given just because of their turnovers. And then if you want to talk about Eli had a bit of a slump where he was a little bit inconsistent earlier this year, about a month ago, that was part of it. The running game, worse than ever for the most part until the other day, until last night. That's part of it. The line has had some bumps and bruises, a little bit. That's part of it. The tight end production has been way down. That's part of it.
And all of those things that – and Mike, real quickly, and I'll let you continue. All of those things that Paul just listed also impact red zone efficiency.
No
because
doubt.
If you can run the football, if you get good production out of the tight end, and your point about turnovers, I just want to throw out a number here, Mike, to express why I think turnovers is actually the biggest reason why the points are down. Through 10 games last season, 10 weeks, I should say, the Giants had 10 turnovers. They have 18 turnovers through the same amount of weeks this season. That's a difference of 8 right there. I mean, think about how many possessions you're losing. possessions, just opportunities to have the football in your hands as an offense and try to move the football down the field. I mean, that's a huge difference right there. That would explain why you're down 5 or 6 points, which is essentially a touchdown.
Yeah, but 6 points a game is quite a bit.
Well, but think about it.
He just did the math for you.
Mike, if you're down about 8 possessions on offense because of the turnover difference, I don't think it's necessarily a surprise that, yes, you're averaging about a touchdown less. That's a big disparity. 18 turnovers versus 10 turnovers at this point last season.
Yeah, but to me, I don't know. Last year, they were a top 10 offense. Top 10. They're at the bottom of the league.
Well, they're not at the bottom of the league. They're bottom of the league in terms of points.
Less than mediocre.
Well, yeah, the yardage, they're up there. The yardage is not the problem. The problem is the points. They're not punching it in. They're moving the football just like they did last season, Mike, and the numbers show that. The difference is that they're just not finishing. They're settling for field goals as opposed to touchdowns, or they're just not walking away with points. That's the biggest difference from last season. The yardage is not off from last season at all.
One last question. What's the story with Will Beatty?
Well, he's been a healthy scratch at times, and now because of the injuries, clearly he's been active at times. I mean, I think it really comes down to, Paul, what the coaches are seeing in practice. That's what it comes down to. And if they don't feel that the execution is there, then they're not going to bring this guy up and put a uniform.
You've got to be one of the best 5 to start, and you got to be one of the best 6 if you're going to be the first guy off the bench, or if you're going to be the jumbo tight end, yep, whatever you want to call it. You got to be one of the top 6, or you're not cracking it. It's that simple.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, Mike.
Sure.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
I understand he's disappointed. He wants to see more fireworks, and that's fine. Honestly, I get that. We're not trying to mock you at all. We understand that. But 6-3, doing what you have to do to win, is a lot better than averaging 26 points a game and not being in a playoff chase.
That's the key. You don't get brownie points or style points for how you win football
games.
This
isn't
the
NCAA college football poll.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Where the computer rankings because of strength of schedule or who you played. That doesn't matter. And I understand, clearly, there's still room for improvement on this team.
Darn straight there is.
Yes, there's room for improvement. That's
absolutely
not, that's not the point. The point is, if you win some games with your defense on the field at the end, so be it. If you win some games with running the football, so be it. Better you have some versatility to win games in a variety of ways than be so dependent on one facet of your team.
Look, would it be nice if they're averaging 26 points a game on offense again so they could make life somewhat easier so that poor guys like our caller just there doesn't have to be biting his nails in the final couple of minutes of a game? Sure, that would be kind of nice. Why not? I can appreciate the fans' perspective. But at the same time, the bottom line is here. The Giants have to find ways to win. And even if some things aren't as shiny and as, you know, glossy and as spectacular as maybe they once were or you want them to be, they have to find ways to scratch out wins. And they're doing that right now.
Well, but here's the other thing. And we're going to get to another call or two before we get to an end. But here's another thing that I want to pick up on what the last caller, Mike, brought up. Okay, so the offensive production is down in terms of points per game, Paul.
Okay.
About a touchdown off. On the flip side, though, what about the defensive improvement in terms of points surrendered this season compared to last season? And what I mean by that is you're not giving up nearly as many points as you were last season. So you can afford maybe the offensive production to
go down
slightly.
You're not playing a track meet anymore.
Exactly. Right now, they're 11th in the NFL in points per game. Defensive scoring.
Right.
They're giving up just over 20 a game. Now, let's go back to 2015, where the Giants finished in terms of points per game surrendered. And the Giants last season gave up 27.6 points. That was third worst in the National Football League. So you're 11th this season. You were 30th last season. So you made huge strides defensively. Yes, you went down offensively, but the pressure is not on the offense this year like it was last year. So it's a little bit of a balance there.
Remember, the framework here was, based on what we knew about the offense, if the Giants could come anywhere into the mid-teens of the defensive rankings, they would probably be in a wild card discussion based on the offense that we had, that we thought they had last year, and if the defense would come up even half. Well, it looks like the defense is coming up higher than half. They're actually becoming one of the better now, top third of the league. That gives your offense some room to maybe not be as glitzy as they used to be.
We were talking about, can the defense meet the offense halfway? That was always the
story. Kind of like a slinky.
Yeah.
Remember the slinky?
Balance it out.
Balance it out.
There you go. Boy, you're really going old school with the references. Thriller, the slinky. I mean, I don't know what else we're going to bring up on this show. You're dating yourself
on
this program.
Hey, I have a laptop, right?
That's a good step in the right direction. Yeah. Could have had a typewriter here. That would have been something.
Hey, it used to be a stone palette.
Indeed. Let's head back to the phone lines. Jay is in Brooklyn. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making the call, Jay. So what do you got for us?
So I have a few quick points, I guess, to address what the previous caller was saying about the offense. And also the fact that we have two fullbacks on IR, it doesn't help that we don't have a lead blocker. That really kills our run game and play action. But besides that, I thought it was really funny that ESPN has their power rankings. We went down from 12th to 16th after beating their 8th-ranked team. So that was pretty hilarious.
Wow. Putting stock in rankings to me is not a big deal.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, who cares about the rankings?
At the end of the day,
it's the standings that get you into the playoffs,
right.
Not some network's rankings.
Yeah.
Right.
What else you got, Jay?
Yeah, so, you know, shout out to the tackles again. No penalties, pretty clean game. I'm wondering why DRC didn't get as many snaps. You know, I guess I understand, like, the nickel experiment didn't really work. Pro Bowler on the outside. I'm wondering why he didn't get that many snaps over, like, Sensenball even, and why Leon Hall didn't play.
Well, Leon Hall was a healthy scratch. He was inactive for the second straight week, which was surprising, Paul. I thought, considering this was his former team and he knew them well.
I know, right. And we had been told the week before, after he was scratched, and we were all surprised about it, that they had enough safeties available, plus they were also looking for more special teams help, which Trevin Wade does. So I'm interested to see what Coach McAdoo says later on today's conference call about DRC. His number of snaps was down significantly to only 14, which was very surprising to me. Oh, it did. Matt, our producer, is telling us that he believes his back tightened up during the course of the game. I don't remember hearing that in the press box.
I did not hear that either.
But I appreciate that, Matt. Thank you.
So that may have been an explanation as to why his snaps were down a little
bit. You know, I was in the box for most of the game. Then I was on the sidelines, did the post game in the studio in the coaches' club. I never got to go in the locker room after the game. So I did not have an opportunity to address that with him. Matt says he understood it was a back issue.
So I'm sure Ben McAdoo will probably update that on the conference call later today.
How great is that, though? They did what they did against the Bengals' passing attack, holding A.J. Green with a frontline corner, a frontline cover corner being unavailable for much of the game. That's pretty good.
Well, it's all about depth in this league and guys stepping up. I mean, Sensabaugh, who wasn't even with this team in training camp, and now he's getting snaps on defense and making key plays on special teams.
22.
And they're going to probably look to increase, you know, his snaps as they move forward because they're going to want to utilize everybody on the roster right now. We've seen games where Eli Apple's been in and out, DRC's been in and out. I mean, there were games last year when DRC was in and out, and that didn't necessarily lead to positive things. The opposing team would usually take advantage of that. So that's another big difference between this year's team and last year's team. And, Jay, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We certainly covered an awful lot on this program. We certainly appreciate
all the
phone calls.
There was a lot to say.
Yes. As well as the tweets. You can continue to interact with us off the air using hashtag Giants Chat. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday for the remainder of the week. Quick turnaround. Bears will be coming to town on Sunday. Tomorrow, Ben McAdoo will address the media. He'll start to look ahead to the Chicago Bears as the Giants are going to have to flip the script rather quickly.
And by the way, we should tell you folks, Coach McAdoo's not talking tomorrow. His presser's not until 5:30 in the afternoon. So Giants press conference live, which you usually watch on MSG at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's been moved around a lot this year because of the crazy scheduling.
Fluctuation.
My understanding is that show probably won't be on until either 5:30 when Coach McAdoo speaks, or if he's a little bit delayed, we might not even be on until 6 o'clock tomorrow night with Giants press conference live. So understand, everything's getting pushed back tomorrow. So if you're looking at Twitter and you're looking for your Giants coverage tomorrow during the day at lunchtime, it's not going to be there. Everything's getting pushed back more towards dinner time tomorrow coming off of the Monday night game.
But stay locked to Giants.com, obviously, for the latest in terms of the schedule and so forth. But the first thing, at least, up is Ben McAdoo having a conference call later today. Giants.com will have full coverage, and we will also cover it on Twitter as well. Once again, appreciate everybody for tuning in for Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday here on Giants.com.